Sarah Putt, good morning to you.
Morning.
Hong Kong, goodness, it's come so quickly in the end, the swiftness and the scale of the security measures that have been passed impacting on citizens there. What is it going to mean for internet freedom?
Right, so that is absolutely true. So what's happened, as you've pointed out, is that these new security laws have been passed. People are still trying to get to grips with them and understand what that means in terms of from a tech perspective. The first thing that the tech giants did as soon as they found out and as soon as this law came into being, which, you know, nobody really knew about until it had been passed, and then everybody saw the text of it and realised that this just really what has been happening in China is now probably going to unfortunately extend to Hong Kong as well. What that means is that there will be restrictions on There's likely to be restrictions on the type of access that the apps and the websites that you can access, and also the data that you have and that you've used in programs like WhatsApp and in other apps could potentially be required to be handed over to Chinese authorities. Now, what the big tech companies Twitter, Zoom, Facebook, and LinkedIn and Google said is that they will temporarily stop complying with requests for user data from Hong Kong authorities. So it's the first thing they're going to do. Now, this could be quite a difficult thing for their employees who are based in Hong Kong, because the understanding around the law is that if you don't comply, you could be looking at a jail sentence. So very serious for these businesses who had felt that they could operate in Hong Kong as they do in other parts of the world without these kinds of restrictions in place.
Practically, what is it going to mean for ordinary citizens? I know what you're saying about the companies, but obviously the concern now is that little buffer of protection when you are in Hong Kong vis-a-vis on the mainland, people feel is being eroded away. And obviously also we've seen social media and technology play a part in much of the protests that have gone on for some years now. Practically, what are people going to be thinking about day to day?
Well, it's already started, like you point out. There's 7 million people apparently living in Hong Kong. And up until now, as you point out, they have used social media, as everybody does, to organise. We saw a string of protests last year, and it just continued, and it must have caused China huge concern, because there was really nothing that they could overtly do about it without causing massive tensions around the world. So what people did who were protesting and who wanted to retain Hong Kong, it's the two systems, one state kind of approach, who wanted to retain their democratic rights and their rights to freedom of speech, as they would organise using these different apps. And a whole bunch of local apps and local companies started up. There was one called, I think it was called something like Let's Eat Here. Oh, no, Eat With You. And it ranked all the restaurants according to their political alignment. Now, what's happened is that's gone. So a lot of people who had been quite vocal on social media are taking down their posts, because they are afraid that if these laws go to their logical conclusion as to what they fear, they could be looking at they're at risk, their liberty is at risk. So that's one of the sort of immediate consequences of what's happening over there.
What is it going to mean for the likes of Twitter and Facebook? Are they already supplying user data in a way that they do everywhere else in the world? Are they doing more?
Well, at the moment, they've said they won't be doing it as they might have done in the course of, you know, every day sort of ways. But you remember that Twitter and Google and Facebook are banned in China, so you can't go and use Google when you're in China. And there was a huge outcry from Google employees about 1 or 2 years ago. They had this kind of covert operation called Operation Dragonfly. They wanted to get back into China because it is, you know, hugely interesting and massive lucrative market there. But their own employees said no, you can't. But the only way they could get in is if they censored Google, and they weren't prepared to do that because their own employees said, no, we won't allow that to happen. The situation, so they're already kind of restricted, and whilst they might get quite a lot of ad revenue or whatever from Hong Kong, there probably isn't a huge market for them when you consider how big their footprint is across the world. It's the people who live in Hong Kong, and it's the data that they have out there in the web that they'll be concerned about, and it's the suppression almost of individual companies and that might have come out out of the Hong Kong ecosystem, the Hong Kong tech ecosystem. But what's it's harder for companies like Google or Amazon, which have big offices there and their people work there. How are they going to move that out of the way? And it's more difficult. You know, they've got data centers there. So a lot of infrastructure in that in Hong Kong, which has they'll no doubt be looking at that immediately. But it is the most concerning is what data is out there and what will it get? Will it get me in trouble? Because last year I attended a protest, or I sent a message out to friends on my WhatsApp or whatever, and there was a concern that WhatsApp data would be turned over, and then WhatsApp came back and said they weren't going to do that, and of course WhatsApp's owned by Facebook. But you know, there must be at that in Hong Kong right now some concern around that.
TikTok has had a lot of pushback over the last week or so. It's interesting trying to sort the noise from the reality here. There's a lot of geopolitics sometimes surrounding these companies. But what is the reason for the scrutiny, and is there validity to it?
Yes, so TikTok is in a slightly different, well, quite different situation to the other companies that I mentioned, which are pretty much the big American tech companies. TikTok is owned by a company called ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. Now, there's always been this concern or this talk that ByteDance gives its data to the Chinese government. They've always denied it. They are one of the few Chinese tech companies that have got real traction outside of China. They want to keep that. They want to keep their presence in America. They want to keep their presence in India. But what's happened is that they have definitely got caught in the crossfire of the US-China geopolitical tensions. The first indication was India. They've stopped allowing people to use TikTok because of they're having a border dispute with Beijing. So there's that. So suddenly they're basically, you know, that community, that country is almost closed off to them. They've said, and now Mike Pompeo, who's the Secretary of State in the US, he has indicated that they are looking at maybe stopping Chinese apps in America. It's almost like a tit for tat situation. But meanwhile, TikTok saying is one, we don't send our tech data. They've denied it, and they're trying to show that they are very sort of pro America, etc. They've hired a new CEO from who used to work for Disney. So they're trying to say, you know, we are neutral, we are like everybody else. And but it's a hard one. It's a hard one because how much is real and how much is rhetoric?
Yeah, for sure. And as I said, it's increasingly becoming the sort of the focus for the geopolitical scraps in many ways. What of New Zealand users? I mean, we're not in the situation that Hong Kong citizens are in at the moment. However, again, are we just too blasé sometimes about how much of our data is available in so many places?
Absolutely. There's definitely that. And I think there's a real, you know, there's so much more understanding of your data and where it sits and what happens to it and who should have control over it. I think there's a part of us in New Zealand, we have long worked with people in Hong Kong. Many people have professional and personal ties with people in Hong Kong. So there's that community aspect to it. There's also this idea that the internet is splitting. It's splitting into three or two distinct camps, China's internet and the US internet, and a little bit Europe's internet is slightly different in that it's more heavily regulated. But it's you know, the internet is something that you would hope would bring people together and promote freedom of speech and trade and all the rest of it, but it seems to be now becoming much more fragmented. That will have impact on innovation. There's huge innovation happening in China that could be barred from us. We could not take advantage of that or share that innovation. And anything that brings in more censorship and lack of freedom of speech is something that I think should concern everybody.
Let's talk about the health IT shake-up. The long-awaited Heather Simpson review, of course, came out. It got completely swamped by other stories at the time. I can't remember which one took it out. I can't remember which one. It might have been the health minister's resignation. I'm not sure.
It's the ongoing COVID-19, I think.
Stuff,
that
yes.
Rolling story.
Yes. It didn't get a lot of coverage. It's recommending, obviously, some of the stuff people know is, you know, reducing radically the number of districts Secret Health Board's creating another new bureaucracy that would pick up some of those oversight functions, I guess, of the health boards and try and force more cooperation between them. There's a new Māori health agency that was to be created as well. When it comes to how IT works, however, did it address it at all?
It did. That report is almost 300 pages and it is dense. And so, there's a lot to chew over that. And understandably, as we've said, COVID-19 is the story, is the health story of this year. And so it should be. But it would be wrong, I think, if we ignored so many of those recommendations and we didn't go back and look at them and find out, and ensure that there is some sort of progress, especially in the next, with an election coming up in the next parliamentary term. There's a whole chapter on digital and data. IT is an area that requires a huge amount of attention and, unfortunately, taxpayer dollars. Prior to Heather Simpson's report coming out, there was a national stock take of the DHBs, and it came to this conclusion or at this headlining figure that in order to bring the IT systems up to scratch, it's going to be a $2.3 billion investment over 10 years. I mean, in the numbers that we talk about now in the wake of COVID-19, that doesn't seem as much as it might have, pre-COVID. But it's still a huge investment. It's needed to do it because our systems are just so disparate. Like you mentioned, the fact that, we have, 20 DHBs. All of them have got legacy systems and they're trying to, so you've got to deal with that before you can even update and make the most of the new technology that's coming down the stream. And also on top of that, you've got the primary care sector, which is obviously the GPs, and they've all pretty much got online and got good computer systems in place, but they're all disparate. They're all different, and so there's not this joined up. There's not these joined up systems, and so you can't get a sense of that things that you need around collaboration or really good data sets to look into research to inform research and policy development. And there's even discussion in this report about cybersecurity being not as robust as it could be. So very real issues, and they're trying to address them they've mooted this idea around a national health investment platform. And in the language of IT, they've shortened it to NHIP. And this was given about $5 million in the latest budget to complete the business case, but it's pretty much ready to go. Unfortunately, because of COVID, it's probably not going to start again until after the election if the new government want to proceed.
Interesting stuff. Let's talk about the Trans-Tasman bubble and tech companies next time you're back. Thanks very much, Sarah Park, tech commentator.